Welcome to the Swim and Tell Spotlight. I am Jamie Bailey, and today's guest is a coach whose stock is quickly rising in the world of college swimming. Coach Matthew Gearing is in his third season as the head coach at Catawba College. Last season, he was named the South Atlantic Conference Men's Coach of the Year after leading both his men's and women's team to their best ever finish at conference championships. Most recently, Catawba was named the number one most improved Division II team for both men and women by SwimCloud. Before taking over at Catawba, Coach Gearing worked as an assistant at several top-tier powerhouse programs, including Florida State, Indiana, and Queens. Coach, it is great to have you on today.
Yeah, thanks, Jimmy. I appreciate it. It's episode six for you guys, and first D2 coach, which is awesome, and had a lot of really good guests so far. So I'm excited to join the conversation.
Oh yeah, this one's going to be fun. Okay, so this is your first head coaching role, right? But you've had the chance to work with some incredible coaches like, you know, David Marsh, Jeff Dugdale, Ray Luce, Neil Studd. So, you know, what are some of the biggest lessons you picked up from them that, you know, kind of prepared you to take over the reins at Catawba?
Yeah. All of them have taught me a lot of different things, and they're all very different individuals, different coaches, the way they go about things. And I think they all have success in their own way, which is really cool. So that first and foremost, like, you know, I think when you look at the sport of swimming, there's not one way to do it. There's a lot of different ways to get to the same end result, which is really cool. You know, you mentioned David Marsh and Jeff Dugdale, like those are the guys that gave me the start. I had a weird entry into swimming where I didn't actually swim in college myself. I ended up having three heart surgeries. And two in high school, or I'm sorry, one in high school, two my freshman year of college. And so swimming competitively for me was done in high school. It just wasn't going to happen. And I felt like I wanted to get into coaching. So reached out to Jeff at Queens and had, you know, just said, hey, I think I want to do this and work for free and come and do whatever you want me to do. And of course, you know, if someone emails me that, I'm going to say, absolutely, come on, let's see what we can do here. And Jeff was awesome. I mean, from the beginning, just owe so much to him. Incredible mentor, and you know, really no better place at that time. Fall of 2015 is when I started at Queens. No better place, I feel like, in the country, because we also had SwimMAC Team Elite going on with Coach Marsh. I got there, and within a few months, he was named the head coach for the 2016 U.S. team for the women. And I just got to be a sponge, and I just hung out at practice. I was spending literally my entire day at the pool deck. If I was not in class, then I was out on the pool deck there, and just logged a lot of hours and watched and listened and helped when I could, and got more responsibilities as the years went on. I was at Queens for 4 years and worked with Coach Marsh for those 4 years as well, and yeah, it was awesome. I think from David, you see like what are the best athletes doing? You know, at that time we had Ryan Lochte, Tyler Clary, Kathleen Baker, Katie Miley, Yusuke Irie, Japanese backstroker, came and joined us. We had a group of Israeli athletes that were incredible, and yeah, it was just cool, like to see the creativity and to see the just broadness of training for one coach to have for a group of professionals was like really eye opening. Like that was my entryway into coaching. So that was really cool. And then on the college side with Jeff and Queens, like, I mean, gosh, like my first year there, they had just come off winning their first national championship. So that they had done it, right? I guess I kind of missed the fun part because it's always harder to sustain it. But yeah, and we felt that. And I think from Jeff, it's how do you build a championship team? How do you build a championship culture? And then probably the piece that I got to see the most was like, how do you sustain that? It's easy, maybe not easy. It's easier to win one, right? You can win one and then you're gone. But like, I was there for 4 years and we won all 4 years, both men and women. So, you know, eight national championships. And then they continued to do it once I left. So that was really just like peak swimming, which was awesome for my gateway into coaching. And then I went to Indiana and had an awesome experience and got to spend time with Ray and really great staff there. Corey Chitwood was there, Jonty Skinner, John Long, who was actually at Queens with me. John's one of my best friends, and got to just learn a completely different style. I mean, I would say not a lot of similarities between the two programs, which is cool. You know, it's like, hey, this is something that I don't know anything about, and let's watch. And this is a, you know, Power Five, and that was a bit of a weird year because that finishing that year in March is when COVID happened, and so we didn't get to go to NCAAs. I didn't get to do that. I didn't. We were preparing for trials. We had, you know, Lily King and Cody Miller and Annie Laser and Zach Apple, Blake Peroni, just like a huge group of pros there. So I kind of got to continue with the pro side, which was really fun. But we didn't get to necessarily see that out. And so that was like, okay, how do these people handle adversity? You know, we had Lily and Cody and a group of pros that were driving 1 hour and 15 minutes one way to go swim a backyard pool at some lady that we found in Indianapolis, just to keep it going because we didn't know what was happening, you know, on a global stage. So that was really cool. You know, Florida State was another one, just being in the ACC, getting to from afar watch UVA, watch Todd, watch Gretchen, watch what they're doing, and being in a program that got to regularly compete with the best teams. That was really cool. And then, you know, something that's not maybe mentioned just because it's not a Power Five or four now. My time at in Arkansas at Little Rock was like really transformational for me. That was my first time where I kind of got to like do things on my own. And my head coach there, Amy Burgess, like absolutely love her. She just entrusted me with the world and allowed me to kind of come in and do my thing and make changes. And she wanted me to challenge her, and I loved it there. Like that, my wife and I look back on those year, that year, 14 months that we were there. It was a short stay, unfortunately, but very fondly. And that, you know, I learned so much from my previous stops, and I kind of got to use it all at that point, and felt like I kind of knew what I was doing. So that probably helped me a lot, you know, more of the use the knowledge, where the beginning was like, all right, I'm gaining a lot of knowledge, and then I got to use it and get the confidence of like, okay, I know what I'm doing. And I take things from everywhere with where I'm at now at Catawba, and that's been cool. I mean, I look back a lot at what we did and on some of those places, and still talk to a lot of those coaches and get opinions and advice, and they're awesome to be able to provide some feedback to me and help me if I'm tell me I'm on the right track, or maybe help me and figure out something different that I might need to change. So.
So last episode, Coach Parisi talked about how he's still on his 4-year plan 38 seasons later, right? So, you know, do you have a 4-year plan? Is it going according to plan?
Oh man, yeah. I told the kids like, hey, this is my junior year. You know, we're still, I think, figuring things out here. The first year is crazy. Like, you know, like you said, first time head coach. I was 26 when I got hired, I think, maybe 25. So I was young, right? My wife and I were newly married. We just had a son. We moved here, and things were crazy. I think I got here like a week before the student athletes in August, and I had to, you know, the gear, the had to make some meet schedule changes, had to just what's a schedule, I had to hire an assistant, just like so many things that you don't really have any sort of previous knowledge on as an assistant coach. So that was like kind of just a whirlwind the whole year. And last year two, like, all right, have some things settled a little bit more, and felt like we're kind of moving in a good direction. And this year's like really taken off. And I think had anyone told me where we would be at 2.5 years when I took the job, I don't think I would have believed it. We've done some really incredible things that I'm really proud of. I'm proud of our staff, proud of our student athletes, and I really don't think they thought that that was possible either. I mean, we still have kids on our team, seniors right now, that were coached by the old staff, in our junior class, you know, myself and my one assistant who's been with me the whole time, they've been our first year, but we didn't recruit them, right? So they came in kind of thinking one thing and they got something totally different. So yeah, I think, you know, 4-year plan, maybe hard to say. I'm definitely got a long-term kind of vision of what we're trying to do. And I think we're ahead of schedule for that.
Okay, so you talked about recruiting there for a second. So let's dig in there. So, all right, so you're in North Carolina, right? And North Carolina, it's a huge swimming hotspot. You have a ton of great clubs. You talked about SwimMAC earlier. You have Tap Titans. You have others. And there's also a lot of college programs in the state. There's actually 26 colleges in the state of North Carolina that have a swimming program, which is a lot. So you've grown your team now to about 20 men, 21 women this year, but about half your roster is international. So was that by design or did it just kind of happen? And has finding athletes that fit in your system, the system that you've learned over the years, has that been one of the bigger challenges in building your program early on?
Yeah. North Carolina is awesome for all of those reasons you said. The club swimming, the recruiting piece of it's awesome. The number of colleges makes it really easy to travel for dual meets. You mentioned team size there. You know, my first year when I got here, we had 10 men on the roster. And I was like, oof, wow, that's a rough spot to start. And I wasn't recruiting anyone in August. So we had 10 last year. Year two, we had 15. And then this year we have 20. So that's been a really nice kind of jump in progression. On the women's side, we had 14 when I got here, 19 last year, and now 21. So that's been awesome. We've been lucky that we've been a young team for the most part. We haven't graduated a ton of people each year, just kind of by the nature of what it was when we came in. We have a ton of internationals, and that is by design. You know, one of my goals and one of the things I talked to my AD about when I was coming here was, you know, we want to have a team that looks like the world. We want to create an environment and an atmosphere for people from all over to come and be a part of a program and have like-minded individuals that have similar goals to them and all work towards achieving those, both team and individual. We have 18 countries right now represented on our team, including the US, right? So 17 international. And that is absolutely incredible. It is fun on a daily basis. I think it provides a lot of opportunities for our athletes. This past summer, we have a guy that lives in Romania, and we have a guy from Atlanta, Georgia, from Boston, Massachusetts, and Poland. The three of them went to Romania and spent 3 weeks there with our other guy. And, you know, you're not getting that opportunity at a lot of places or from a lot of other kind of outlets other than, you know, college swimming with international athletes. So we have people go to Germany and spend time with our athletes over the summer and Spain, and they have fun with it. And I think that's awesome. You know, your question of has it been hard finding people that maybe fit into what we're doing here? I don't think so. So far, it hasn't been. And I think part of that reason is because I wouldn't say that we necessarily have a set in stone type of program. I feel that what we do really well is we try to fit the program around the athlete, not necessarily the athlete for the program. You know, it's not a one size fits all type model. Jeff Ducktail is great at quoting, it's one size fits one, right? Everybody's going to be different. We treat everybody the same by treating them equal. And so, you know, we're going to do things that are different for each person. The schedules that we have are pretty crazy. The movement that we do throughout a week for an athlete is pretty different, and everybody's different in that. You know, we do have kind of the typical sprint, mid D distance type of groups, but we have a few people that see all groups throughout the week. And we have a lot of people who bounce back and forth, and we just get creative with it really and try to make sure that we're fitting what needs to be done for that specific athlete. And so I think that's been really helpful for us. And I also think we adapt and change a lot as we learn things about our athletes. You know, freshman year, we're really just trying to figure out the person. We have our preconceived notions of, hey, we think this is going to work, and we go through the year, and I would say we're pretty spot on about 95% of the time, and that other 5%, all right, we were a little off here, and we need to make some adjustments. And the great thing is, we make those adjustments, and then year two tends to be a little bit better for that person. So we're not afraid to do that. We're not afraid to move people around, because at the end of the day, we want to do what's best for them.
Yeah, so you talked about individualization and being able to I really like that quote, fit the program around the athlete. So when you look at Catawba, it's a smaller school. You have about 1,100 students enrolled, but what I was really surprised about was you actually have two assistant coaches, and that's more than most programs can say. It's you don't see a lot of programs that have large staffs these days. You have about a 40 swimmer team. Three coaches, that's actually a really good ratio for giving those athletes individual attention, which is something that with the athletes that we work with, that's one of the things that we talk about, is, if you have a team that's got 90 swimmers and they have two coaches, that's a tough ratio, right? But the kind of support where you get two assistant coaches, that usually points to having a pretty strong backing from your athletic department, your administration. So what can you tell me about the vision for Catawba swimming between you and your athletic director?
I mean, my AD Michelle Cadigan is awesome. I mean, took a chance on a 20, 25, 26-year-old to kind of come in, and you know, we talked a lot about what I wanted to do. You know, at that time it was probably like, okay, we'll see if this happens or not, and if it does, that's great, and if it doesn't, like, you know, it is what it is. And it has, and I think we've done more than, like I said, what I expected in this time frame, and I think what a lot of people probably expected as well. But we have a ton of support, and having two assistant coaches, that's a new thing for us this year. I was able to get another position this past summer, and that's been an incredible addition to our program. It's made it easier on me, which I've really appreciated. It's made it easier on my other assistant coach, right? We can just delegate a little bit more. We can split up the work a little bit more. It's important for me that we all get our rest, and that we, you know, aren't just running ourselves ragged the entire year. You know, I have a family, I have a wife and a son, and that's important to me. So making sure I can do what I need to do in my family obligations, and have the trust that they're gonna do what needs to be done in the way that it needs to be done. That's been really big, and it's been great. You know, I think the vision for the program is really strong, and I think we have a multi-year plan here. You know, our first year, our men got fourth at conference. Last year, we got second, and so, you know, our goal for sure on the men's side is to win. We want to win our conference championship. That is 100% our goal. On the women's side, we got third our first year, which was awesome. We should have gotten fourth. And then we got third last year, and that was a di very different type of third. I think we cut, I'd have to go back and look, but we cut down like over 600 points from that second place team. We got really close, and that was our goal. Like, our goal, we set out the year of like, hey, we're gonna get close here, because we knew what we did the year before. And so, yeah, I think the goal for them as well is to win. And I think both teams are really probably on a similar timeline of achieving that goal. So that's really fun, and that's really exciting. And I think you said it earlier, both our men's and our women's were the most improved team in Division II in 2024. And I think that's great, because it's both. It's not one or the other. It's not, oh my gosh, Catawba has an awesome men's team or an awesome women's team. Like, no, both of our teams are really good, which is really fun. It's, you don't maybe see that everywhere. I think, you know, sometimes there's one better than the other. So yeah, that's kind of more short term of what we want to accomplish. And then long term, it's getting people continually and consistently qualified to the NCAA National Championship. Our first year, we qualified a woman, which hadn't happened since 2001. So that had been 22 years. We did it in year one, and she went on and became an All-American as a freshman, scored points, and got Catawba up on the board, which was really exciting. Last year we had three women qualify, so that was like, oh my gosh, this is great. We got some people here, and we had a guy. That was the first time for a guy, I think, since 2017. And he was incredible. Conference swimmer of the year as a freshman for us. All-American 7th in the 100 breaststroke, 16th in the 200 freestyle. So he did wonderful things there and getting us on the map on the men's side. And so yeah, that's the goal. We want to continue doing that. We'll see what this year brings. We feel pretty good with some of the people that we have in position right now. We have a men's relay qualified automatically. That hasn't happened since 2017. So yeah, we're in a good spot, but we know that there's more. We know that there's more that we want to do. So getting people qualified and then really looking and saying, hey, what does it take to get top 15? What does it take to get top 10? What does it take to get top 5? How do you contend for a national championship? Right? What does that look like? And I think my experience and my time with Jeff and Queens has prepared me for that. And those are things that we're striving for. So we have some big goals. We'll see how long some of those things take us to accomplish. But I think, like I said, we're on a really good path, and we have a ton of support from our administration, from our whole entire campus, and from the institution as a whole.
Yes, you talked about growing your roster from 10, up to over 20, right? So, just going to conference championships, you can take probably 17, 18 swimmers, right? That can score points. And I think it's really interesting when we talk about roster sizes, the strategy around that, right? Because if you have a roster of 40, so look at what Ray Luce has done at Indiana historically, had a larger roster size, which has allowed him kind of the freedom to do a lot of development. You're going to take your top 17, but you've got these athletes that you're building up. They're going to contribute in big ways their junior and senior year. Whereas now with there's so much talk about roster size restrictions with all the changes coming, a smaller roster, you don't have a lot of room for error, right? So with 20 men, 20 women, you're going to take 17. You don't have a ton of room for error if you're trying to win conference championships. And then if you're trying to develop a team that's going to compete, at NCAAs as well. So what's kind of your theoretical sweet spot? What's the size team? If you had all the resources in the world, what is your sweet spot for roster size on your men's and your women's team?
Gosh, if I had all the resources, oh man, it's honestly probably not too different than what it would look like if I didn't have those resources, really. I mean, I think 25 on each side is what we're shooting for, and I think that's a good size. So we get to take 18. We get to take 18 to our conference meet. One of the really good things, and I'll say this is awesome about our conference, we get to take everyone to our conference meet. But we have to designate our scoring 18, and then the remainders are our exhibition athletes. But they still get to swim in prelims, so they get to go. They get to be a part of it. They get to go through the taper and the rest. And we want them to swim fast and go best times in prelims and do all those things. And I think that's nice because not every conference does that. And at the end of the day, we're trying to provide a good experience for our athletes, right? And I get it. Like, there's lines, and you gotta swimming's pretty black and white. It's right. You're either going to score the points or you're not. But I still think, hey, we can give this experience to those people. And so I really like that about our conference. But yeah, I think 25 on both sides is a really good number. I think it's not too big. It's not too small. You get to know everybody. It doesn't get just out of control because, I've seen it. I've seen where there's teams of 90, like you said, and maybe you have a ton of assistant coaches. That's fine, but I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot to manage, and I think in what we do, probably in everything, I think quality is better than quantity, and that's kind of the motto that we live by with our staff, in a training sense, and I think it's no different probably on a recruiting sense and retention and roster size.
Yeah, we had Coach John Howell on earlier, and he talked about he has a large team. They have about 40 men and 40 women, and he talked about he's probably gonna whittle that down to 26, 27, 28. I think that he said that's kind of his favorite spot to be as well. So
Let's
it
talk
does
about
feel like that 25 to 30 is a really good spot when we're working with the student athletes, and they're talking about different colleges they want to go to. They often don't think about roster size and the implications there, right? So if you're going to a team that's got 18 swimmers and you can take 18 to conference, yeah, you're going to need to contribute from day one, right? So there can be a little bit more pressure there. If you go to a team of 40, 17 are going to go to conference. So that means 23 aren't, or 22, depending on you, 17, 18, right? And so that can be its own stress. So I love those teams that kind of balance that kind of in that 25 to 30 range. But you know, it also depends on where you're swimming. I think we've talked about it multiple episodes. We've talked about what the Power Fours will do with their roster restrictions. There's a philosophy around that development at that highest level of being able to have the larger teams and have that room for development. And I think it could be restrictive if they are forced to go down as low as 22. I don't know if they'll really go as low as 22, maybe. But that will make it that'll make it difficult. And I think one thing that the athletes don't think about is the pressure of being on a team where there's just 22 athletes and there is a win at all costs mentality. And that's a different pressure than I think you're putting on your kids right now. And I don't know that some of the athletes are ready for that.
Yeah, I don't know. Some of my kids might disagree with you. I'm a competitive guy, and I got a competitive staff, which is helpful when we all get together. Yeah, I think the development versus win now transfer portal type deal. It's a tough one. We've utilized the transfer portal the past 2 years in our recruiting cycle. We're probably going to utilize it again. And it's worked out for us. It's really done really good things for us. I don't think it's the way to live and die by. I think it can win you championships, and I think we've seen that in swimming. I think we've seen that. I mean, I'd love to win a championship next year. So, if that's a path, then like, hey, maybe that's something to consider. But I also think it's really nice to have someone for 4 years, and it's really nice to be able to get to know them and watch them grow and develop. And you can do a little bit more with them. And so that piece of it, I don't think that piece is going to go away. I don't even think it's going to go away at Power Fours. I think it changes, and I think it looks a little bit different. And you had Coach Doran caught on, and they're talking about the club system with college. And I think that's going to happen. I think kids are going to want to be at Ohio State because it's Ohio State, right? Even if it's the club team, and they're going to work their way up. Some of them for sure are going to do that. You have a ton of examples of late bloomers who weren't great, weren't going to an awesome school, one of these schools that everyone thinks of out of high school, and then they just something happens and they're incredible. And I think my easy example is Zach Apple, because he's one of my best friends. Zach wasn't one of the top recruits coming out of high school. He developed a lot, and he got really good his senior year, and then some things with his recruiting process changed with the school he was committed to, and then ended up going to Auburn. And like, that was an awesome thing for him. And then and transferred to Indiana and continued there and made the Olympic team. So it's not always like, hey, these top 10 kids on swim cloud are gonna be the best for the next 8, 10 years. There's a lot of development in our sport, and I think that's a big piece that coaches are gonna have to really keep at the forefront of their minds and make sure that they're doing the best thing, whatever the best thing they think is for the program.
So you know this, right? In college swimming, there's different ways to win. You can win because you recruit better than everyone else. You can win because you develop better than everyone else, or some combination of the two. When we talked to Dorencott, pointing out to Coach Dorencott, you don't have the best recruits in the Big Ten, but you win the Big Ten, right? That's really impressive. And it's the same with Coach Dugdale at Queens. Just phenomenal development. I listened to Bob Bowman speak recently, and he talked about how the roster size restrictions, especially at the Power Four level, were really going to restrict their ability to be patient with development. And he talked about, those diamonds in the rough are going to be really difficult for us to go find in development. It was putting a tremendous amount of pressure to win now. And then that kind of goes back to the, if the SEC really does go to 22 men, right? There really isn't a lot of room for error, and it's highly competitive. We see this in football and basketball now. Once transfer rules change to where you don't have to sit out a year, you almost have a free agency. You throw NIL money in there, and now all of a sudden we're starting to get, these athletes are flipping schools to go wherever they, whoever, I guess, has the money, who needs to win now. And so that you mentioned the portal. So yeah, the transfer portal is more active. Coach Breeny talked about in the last episode how, there are instances where swimmers are actually going to the highest bidders. I think that is absolutely more at the very top end, but I think there is some surprising amount of NIL money that gets thrown around even in swimming. But my question is, how far down do you think this is going to go in college swimming, where you have this win now at all costs transfer portal mentality? Do you think that it's going to stay more at that Power Four level, even high-end Power Four? Or do you think that transfer portal mentality, that's going to come down into the, mid majors and then the high end of D2 and D3? You've used the portal, right? So is that, do you think this is a trend? Are we trending more toward that now?
Yeah, I think we are. And I don't think there's any way around it, very honestly. Yeah, I mean, you're definitely going to see it at the Power Four level, and I do think it's going to trickle down. And the tough part is for these kids that are in high school right now. Like, if I'm at a Power Four, I'm probably waiting to take a kid out of the transfer portal versus taking a freshman that I have to develop, who's maybe not going to score points at NCAAs for 2 years. I think it's having the honest conversation with your administration, understanding what the goals are. Okay, like we have these roster limits, we have these things we have to do now. What do you want from us? Because some ADs, it is like, hey, you have to win right now. I don't think we're as cutthroat as football and basketball, which is good, right? We don't want to be that, but I do think there is a pretty high priority on being successful sooner rather than later. Talk about NLI money and everything. NIL, sorry. Get those confused. There's no NLI anymore. NIL money. I was one of the, what was it? The Miami University men's basketball coach. I was watching a thing on him, and you've seen that, right? He was, they just went on really far in the tournament. They're excited. They're celebrating. Kids are in the portal, and it's like, don't you like it here? And kids are like, oh, I love it here, but I'm gonna go see what I can get somewhere else. It's like, that's crazy to me. And I don't think swimming's going to turn to that. I hope it doesn't. But I do think, like you said, like there's some money getting thrown around. I don't know how much of it really. I don't think D2 is seeing a lot of it. I don't think we will. But I think what we probably compete with the most is those mid-major D1s who maybe have a little bit, or they have the Alston money, the random $6,000 that you can just offer to anyone, and for having good grades. It's like, what the heck? So that's pretty crazy. And I think one of the big differences for us, especially on the women's side, is those scholarship numbers, right? Who knows if what it's gonna is it gonna be 30? A lot of schools gonna go to 30. I don't know. Bob already said that's happening at Texas, so I think everyone kind of guessed that. But the 14 is the number before, right? And I don't think people, I hope for their programs that they don't drop below that number. But let's say someone stays at 14 at a mid-major school. Well, the max for D2, if you're lucky to have the max, is 9 point, no, I'm sorry, is 8.1. 9.9 is D1 men. 8.1. So, we're, if you're lucky, operating at 8.1 versus 14 for a mid-major on the women's side. And I mean, yeah, we have people that have been offered full scholarships plus like $5,000 in their pocket. And it's like, what? Like that's crazy to me. And they're of course they're taking it. And so I think that's probably a big challenge that we have to face. And I don't think that part's gonna get any easier. Now, what does that look like with the transfer portal? Maybe some of those spots get taken, and and things like that. So it's a lot of moving parts. And I don't think anyone has a really clear understanding of what's going to happen. I mean, one of the things I was talking with my staff about, like, because we've talked about it, like, hey, should we save some money for the portal this year? I mean, we kind of want to, but we could be sitting here a year from now and be in the very same situation, because these roster limits, these cuts, from my understanding, I could be wrong on this, but from my understanding, none of that's going to be official until there's like the judge makes the ruling.
That's right.
And I think that's coming in April. But I mean, April, that's pretty late. So, you know, I just think that there's so much up in the air. How many of those kids are going to want to stay on the club teams at their Power Four institution? I don't know if, like I said, you know, just living and standing alone on the portal is the right way to go. Cause I think some people will probably be left out high and dry there.
Yeah. Do you think that, yes, there's lots of challenges to the final ruling. There's nuances. There's things coming even out at the highest political levels about this. How do you think this is going to shake out for Division II swimming? Specifically, do you think these changes are going to have a great effect on D2, just like they are in D1? Or do you think D2 is going to stay generally kind of like it has been the last few years?
I think it's going to have a positive effect on D2. I really do. Because there's going to be the kids who want to make an impact, want to go to NCAAs, want to be a part of a actual varsity team, not a club team. So I do think it'll have a positive impact. And what I think is going to happen is I think people are going to find out that it's not all that different from D1. It really isn't, other than the size of the school, right? And maybe some of the resources, like, hey, you're not going to get 50 t-shirts throughout the year. Sorry. You know, it's like, I've been a part of some of those staffs where it's just like, all right, we got some money to burn here. And that's not the case at D2, but I also don't think you have to have a great experience. I don't think that's tied to a great experience. I think you can give a great experience a lot of different ways. Going to NCAAs, becoming an All-American, that's a great experience in my opinion. I think that what I try to convey to some of our recruits of like, hey, you can come here, make an impact, go to NCAAs, become an All-American, be on relays, and leave a legacy that is going to live on well after your graduation. Or you can, you know, go and maybe be number 28 on the roster and maybe not have a lot of contribution, but I call them t-shirt collectors. You can say, hey, I'm on this swim team, look at my shirt. Like, I mean, yeah, but how much of that is actually contribution based? So that's my opinion on it. And I've been at the highest end of D2 at Queens, and I've been at some very high ends of D1. And that's really kind of what I've boiled it down to. I think it goes down to the experience that you're given. And again, I'm not saying one of those things is better than the other. That's my personal preference. And I try to convey that to our recruits of like, it's all about what you want out of your experience. You got 4 years of college swimming. So make the most of it. What do you want out of it? Do you want to contribute? Where do you want to be? Do you want to be towards the top, towards the bottom, in the middle? Do you want to go to NCAAs? Do you want to extend your swimming past February? I think, again, nothing is right or wrong. It's all about what the individual is looking for.
Yeah, I agree. And I think I've said it every episode. We always talk about the D1 tunnel vision. When athletes and parents figure out how fast the top end of D2 and D3 is, mm-hmm. they're always shocked. They're always extremely shocked by that. And I'm sure you've encountered that recruiting too. You know, how do you get these kids out of that D1 mindset? Because for me, it's not about Division 1, Division 2, Division 3. It's more about, first off, every conference is pretty much its own world.
Yep.
And those conferences really are the conference you go to, I think, is more indicative of the world you live in and swimming than the division. But it's about finding a place where you're going to thrive and be happy. And I think, you know, getting the kids out of that, it has to be D1. You need to be thinking about where you're going to, you know, where you're going to thrive. And, you know, and I think that's, athletically, it's socially, it's academically. You said leave a legacy. I can tell you work with Jeff Dugdale for a while. He loves that phrase, leaving a legacy, because it's a really great, recruiting. It's a great way to recruit kids, is to talk about that. And I'm curious, do you have to have this D2 versus D1 conversation with the kids a lot?
A lot. Yeah, a lot. And I think it's explaining to them kind of just what we talked about just a few minutes ago of like, there's not a lot of differences. There really isn't. Like, we provide scholarship. We provide all the gear. We travel to meets. Like, we do all those things. And the swimming is very fast. Yes, of course, it's not as fast as Division One, but I mean, there's been a lot of D2 guys that have transferred to some really good D1 schools. And so I think the top end is not that far off. And so yeah, those conversations happen a lot, and I think sometimes they work, sometimes they don't, right? Some kids are just like so set in their ways, and that's fine. That's not like, do what you want to do. That's perfect. Like, you should enjoy your 4 years, and you need to be happy where you're at. Again, like, nothing is right or wrong. It's all about what you want. But I do think, there needs to maybe be a little bit more thought given to D2, because there's a ton of great teams in Division Two. I mean, so many. And yeah, I just, I'd hate for someone to pass that up, a great opportunity, just because of a label, right?
I always love seeing this time of year going through the rankings and seeing fastest relays across swimming, and you it is not what people think. It is not like you're going to see all the Division One teams, and then you're going to see the two Division Two, and then Division Three. No, you have Division Two teams creeping up into top 20 across all colleges, and you have Division Three swimmers that are and that's in that same general performance area as well. So I think that's I will always believe that it's going to be continue to be a shock to the athletes, especially those that are just starting that recruiting process.
A lot of great coaches in D2, D3, NAIA, junior college. There's so many different paths for people. And yeah, there's a lot of good coaching out there.
Yes, and if you get the tunnel vision and you think that you have to go to a specific conference or a specific division, you may miss out on the perfect place to be. And that is the reality of this sport. The best coaching staffs are spread across all the divisions. And that's hopefully one of the things that we help expose doing, this podcast, is showing some of these incredible coaches that aren't in the Power Four. And there are incredible coaches in Power Four, don't get me wrong, but man, there's so many good staffs out there. And you gotta widen that net and find them.
Absolutely.
Okay, I want to switch gears and talk about academics for a second. So your women's team had the highest team GPA in all of Division II for the past 4 semesters, and then your men last semester, I believe, had the highest across all Division II. So that's really, really impressive, especially when you pair that with the improvement that you're seeing in the water, right? And a lot of athletes, they don't think about how they're going to have to balance academics, athletics, social, all that huge change of life from living at home to living in college. And I think that some coaches do a really good job of helping them balance that. And others, maybe not so much, but what role do you play as a coach in helping keep your athletes focused, in the water and in the classroom, and juggle, all the things going on in life, in their first time away from home?
That was a cool thing. Like, the first it was our first semester here, fall of I think 22, and we submit our stuff to the CSCA, and it comes out, number one GPA. I was like, oh my gosh, like, I that wasn't a thought in my mind. And that really like changed that really changed everything for our program. All of a sudden, the recognition from, our AD loved it, our president loved it, the community, just getting like Catawba's name out there, because it wasn't really out there before. That was like the catalyst of like, okay, we're gonna do something here. And our women like loved it. And that was really cool. So then to be able to continue it, they know the expectation, they know what the standard is. It's hard to live on the mountaintop though. So they also know, like, hey, we want to continue to try to do this. We also can't influence what other people do, and so we need to do the best that we can every semester. But I mean, gosh, last fall, a year ago, they had a 3.93 average, which is just like absolutely crazy. This past fall, this will come out probably right when this podcast gets released to the public. We're hoping to make it the fifth semester. They had a 3.89, so we're really hopeful, and I think the men are in a really good spot as well. And yeah, I think it's just really cool. One of the things that we talk about, I always tell all of our freshmen, all the resources that you need to be successful are here, and they're readily available and accessible at your fingertips. The only thing that's going to prevent you from not being successful is yourself. And so we have mandatory study hall, just like every team probably does. We don't go crazy. It's 4 hours a week. I've been a part of some teams where we've done 8 hours, and it's just, I feel like time gets wasted. It's first semester, freshman year. It's really not that tough. We do 4 hours a week. It's just to get them out of their room together in the library. Our captains run that and manage that whole thing. And it's just get in the library, open your book, make sure you're on top of your work, just to try to set up some study habits. Some people that might need to stay in that second semester. If not, we're good and they can get out. But we have one of the benefits, I think, of having a smaller school, like you said, around 1,100, 1,200 students, is our small class sizes. So some of these schools, right, big Power Four schools, you're sitting lecture halls, 300 people. I know for me, that would have not been good. I would have not done well in college had I had that. And I think a lot of people probably gravitate towards that, especially in today's world with the Instagram, TikTok type attention spans. So you're sitting in a classroom. Our biggest class is probably like 30, and that's like a gen ed for a freshman. And then it's going to get whittled down there, and you're going to sit in a class of 10 to 15 as you kind of get more into your major, and you know who your professor is. They know you by name. They'll have you over to their house. You have their cell phone number. That's not happening at a lot of big schools. You're another number. They don't care if you pass or fail. They're trying to just do what they need to do their job, right? And so I think that's a big benefit. They have professors here, obviously, have office hours. We encourage that. In our library, we have a reading and writing center. If your papers or things like that, you can go and get assistance. We have supplemental instruction, kind of tutors. So it's a person that has taken the class, did a really good job, and the professor has asked them to come back and like basically be a tutor for the class. So they sit in, and then they hold kind of their office hours in the evenings in the library. And most of our team is our instructors for that, which is really good. But yeah, I wouldn't really say that we do anything out of the ordinary. I think we have really high expectations. We have very smart student athletes, and they just kind of know what we want to accomplish. That we know, like, we put that on our goal sheet. That's a part of our goals. It's not just the swimming piece. It's the GPA. It's the community service. Both our men and women led the country in D2 in our community service last year. We are trying to create, a very well-rounded individual that can go into a med school interview, or go sit in a job interview for their career or for a master's program, and be able to differentiate themselves against everyone else and say, hey, I was a part of a team that had the highest GPA. I was a part of the team that was the most improved. I was as an All-American. Like, those are things that are really going to set you apart when you're looking at what's next for your life and your career after your undergrad. And I think we've done a great job of that so far.
There are some high-level programs that will discourage you from certain majors because they're too taxing, and you can't balance the two. Not a fan of that. I'm not at all a fan of that. I love, I love programs that can find that balance. And, if you want to go into medical school, you want to go into dental school, pharmacy school, you want to go get your MBA. If there are other athletes that are on the team, kind of on that same track, or that, past athletes that have, that's a really good indication that, you can strike that balance. But the reason I was so impressed by that is just a lot of programs don't have that balance. It is, and I, My theory is that it will get worse with the changes in college swimming in terms of the win now at all costs at the top end. And I do worry about that balance, because in the end, our sport isn't a sport where we have a ton of people making 7 figures a year. You know, endorsements are tough even for our highest athletes. And so you really do need to take advantage of the opportunity of being in school, because that is the best investment, is getting that education. And if we start to see a more cutthroat atmosphere where academics take a back seat, that might end up being detrimental to our sport in the long run.
I think we're lucky because of the nature of our sport. It automatically teaches you hard work, dedication, time management. And I think that's very transferable to a lot of areas of life. There's obviously some one-off cases, but I really think there's a pretty strong correlation between fast swimmers and smart swimmers. They go hand in hand. And the people that have their life in order, the schoolwork, their social life, you go into the locker room, you look at the lockers, like you're going to be able to see who's got their life in order. And that tends to translate pretty well to their daily performance and practice. And so, we as coaches, we have a hand in that, and it's our responsibility to make sure that we're preparing them for whatever it is that they're going to do after this.
Swimmers, competitive swimmers make great employees. I'll
There
tell you
you go.
that. They really do. It is a hard sport, but those that manage that time tend to do really well in their professional career. So that's why I think it's so important that the changes that college swimming and NCAA that they're undergoing, you can't take amateur sports out of college. You can't. It would be so bad, because there's so many athletes in college right now that their athletics is paving the way for their extreme success as an adult, you know, in a workforce. And that's the thing. I know we're such a college football playoffs was, you know, we just, you know,
Just wrap that up.
caught the championship game just happened, right? And there's all this excitement, there's all this money around it. But in the end, you know, while the public is very football crazy, very basketball crazy in March, NCAA athletes, that there is a program here that produces thousands and thousands and thousands of wonderful, wonderfully trained professionals that go out and become doctors and dentists and pharmacists and everything else. And that's why the sport cannot lose its primary mission, which is to create, you know, those individuals that succeed. And that's the fear. I think that's really the fear.
Absolutely.
Okay, so last question. So Catawba, you got a lot of sports there, right? You have football, you have basketball. So besides swimming, what's your favorite sport? What do you like to go watch?
I would say as of recent, this is the first year, inaugural year of our men's volleyball team. And that has been really fun. I'm sit right next door. My office is right next door to our men's volleyball coach. He's incredible. He coached at USC Southern California. He was a national coach of the year and D1 for I think 2 or 3 years. He was coach on the junior national team. He's really awesome, and he's kind of come and started this program, and it's fun. I mean, I've never really watched men's volleyball. We have a women's volleyball team, and our team has really enjoyed going to watch them the 3 years I've been here. But man, men's volleyball is like it's crazy. Those guys are jumping out of the building. And they just absolutely smacked that ball. So that's been really cool. Me and my staff went and watched the first home game the other night. That was really fun. Outside of that, I think God, there's so many good sports. Our women's soccer has gone to the NCAA tournament multiple times. Our women's basketball team got third in the country my first year here. So yeah, I think there's a big kind of sports vibe on campus. A lot of athletes, of our total enrollment, and they go and support each other, which is fun. And our kids love to go to other games as well.
So we've done 6 episodes of this podcast, and that is the second time volleyball has come up as the
Oh,
top
really?
sport. So yeah.
Good. It's fun.
We'll see.
It's just it's very athletic. It's
Yeah, it is a fun. It is a fun sport to watch. It is
think there's
absolutely fun.
a lot of thing I'm like watching, like, all right, how do we jump like that? Wait, we gotta do something in the weight room to get our verticals to match those guys.
Yeah, that start can be the difference, especially in relays, right? So, yeah. Coach Gearing, thank you for coming on. I really appreciate your time. I'm excited to see how you guys end up at conference championships this year. You got a bigger team now. I'm really going to be watching that development. It's really fun to watch you kick off your career with a lot of success.
Thank you, Jamie. I appreciate it. Love what you guys are doing. Product's awesome. This podcast is great, giving people a platform, and appreciate it. Thank you.